Welcome to the debt.
Not ready.
And yet, that was so oddly appropriate for who we're going to talk about today. Can you guess who we're?
Death Watch.
We shouldn't be so gleeful that he passed away. But
man's dead. You know what?
He passed away.
We're going. This is Death Watch.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's right. The show where we look
where
at
we flavin'.
That's right. Where we look at the work of a pop cultural great who has recently passed. My name is Matt Brown.
I'm Matthew Price. And if you couldn't, how could you not? We're doing Professor Frink. No, if you...
Oh my God.
He died. Frink died. If you couldn't know in advance, we will be talking about celebrated... I don't want to say great, but celebrated.
In my notes, it says obnoxious American comedian.
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Who died on August 20th of last year, several years after I would have laid money that he was already dead.
Yes. Yeah.
One of those where it's like, oh shit, really?
Yeah. Remember when he got so sick and ballooned up to like 500 pounds?
Yeah.
He turned into like a big fat version of himself. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we're recording this many weeks before you're hearing it. And today, for whatever reason, Rotten Tomatoes incorrectly
identified
that John Carpenter was dead. And it was one of those things where, I mean, on seeing it, if I hadn't seen it called out as he's not dead, I probably would have believed them. You know, there's a certain point at which someone sort of fades out of the limelight where you just go, yeah, they're probably dead.
Yeah.
Right? They're old. That's what happens to the old. In any event, you know what? Let's walk it back.
Sure.
No, fuck that. It's the Jerry Lewis episode. So, this episode's dropping on the 23rd of February. But before we get into that, let's do roll call.
Edwin Hawkins, singer. Matilda Krim, pioneering AIDS activist, passed away last month. Karapetse Hosetsile, also known as Bra Willie, who is a South African poet. Hugh Wilson, film director and creator of, I'm going to say, my favorite sitcom ever, WKRP in Cincinnati. Hugh Wilson is a hero of mine. I wish he had enough work for us to actually do a show about him, but WKRP is just, it's perfect. It's so great. Peter Mayle, the writer of A Year in Provence and all of these other books about British people moving to the south of France. Terrence Marsh, who was the art director for David Lean and also Mel Brooks. He passed away. Naomi Parker Fraley, who was the model for the Rosie the Riveter poster and was, you know, I guess you could call her the real Rosie the Riveter. Hugh Masekela, wonderful South African trumpeter. Warren Miller, who directed all those really, I guess they're good, ski movies. Mark E. Smith, the singer from The Fall. Mort Walker. Mort Walker, who wrote Beetle Bailey and co-wrote High and Lois. Ursula K. Le Guin, great feminist science fiction writer of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. That sucks. I love Ursula K. Le Guin. Alison Schirmer, who was a producer in Hollywood and passed away way too young. Star Wars, she worked on the current crop of Star Wars films. She worked on The Hunger Games. She was the real deal. And it sucks that she's gone. Bob Smith, who was the first openly gay comic on The Tonight Show, he died this past month. The composer John Morris, who also worked almost exclusively with Mel Brooks. And it's amazing. You know, nobody, I think, very few people really appreciate just how good the music in some of those Mel Brooks films are, because they have to both land emotionally and also be pastiche at the same time. Jay Switzer, who longtime City TV executive, one-time president of Chum, and as responsible as anyone on this planet for my loving movies, because City TV played them all, man. And as I grew up, that's how I started to learn to like them. Ingvar Kamprad, the founder of IKEA, passed away. they tried to bury him, but something Allen Key. Louis Zorich, who was a wonderful, wonderful character actor, probably best known for playing the father on Mad About You. Dennis Edwards, the lead singer for the Temptations, died this past month. Andre Sermain, who was the owner of Lutece. Boy, if there was a person in this world who was of any kind of stature in New York City in the 70s, they went to Lutece for dinner. And Andre Sermain ran that restaurant brilliantly, and we lost him. John Mahoney, of course. What can I say? Oh, man. There's not enough words to talk about John Mahoney. So I'm just going to park that right there. Jill Messick, who was an agent and a producer, sadly lost to suicide this month. Reg Caffey. Let me tell you a quick story about Reg Caffey. So I met Reg Caffey on the street in New York City about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And I recognized him right away because he was one of the stars of Square One Television, which was absolutely one of my favorite shows growing up. It was a kid show, but even when I was in high school, when that show was on, I adored it. It was so funny and so smart. And Reg Caffey was a big part of it. And he went on from there to do the most incredible work on Oz and The Wire and House of Cards and a million films. And he was always brilliant. And also meeting him on the street and recognizing him for just Square One TV, which was this like unknown kids PBS kids show from the 80s. He couldn't have been more gracious and more lovely in person. John Gavin, who acted in Psycho and many other films. The composer, Johan Johansson, who did incredible work in films like, I believe he did Syria. Shit. Anyway, he's wonderful. Frank Sinatra's favorite singer, Vic Damone. The comedian, Marty Allen, whose catchphrase, "Hello there," was unbelievably well known. Marty Allen, if you ever see him, he's a human cartoon. And I have a lot of respect for human cartoons. And as should everybody. Anyway, we lost him as well at the age of like 90 something. I mean, he lived a wonderful life. And at the age of 99 and passing away today, the Reverend Billy Graham.
Thank you. That was roll call. Very nicely done, Matthew.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Well done.
To do that.
Yeah.
Future self of me.
Yeah. Outstanding work. As always, you can support Modern Superior, Death Watch, all of the podcasts on our network by going to patreon.com/modernsuperior and busting out your charging finger and giving us some monies.
And your special dialing watch.
And your special dialing watch. Yeah, absolutely. So, Jerry Lewis, this is going to be... Here's the premise. On Death Watch, we both watch work by the deceased that hopefully we have not seen before.
Yes, which was not a tough chore this time.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Pretty much had the entire catalog.
Yeah, I don't think I had ever seen a Jerry Lewis movie. If I have, I don't know what it would have been.
No, and outside of the one that you watched,
yeah,
which I would not call a Jerry Lewis movie,
yep,
it's still interesting to have watched it.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen any of them because I found him, just the idea of him, not appealing to me.
Yeah.
It's
so weird. So I watched The King of Comedy.
Yes.
And you watched?
I watched two, actually.
Holy
I watched two. I watched The Bellboy,
uh-huh,
which is his directorial debut.
Right.
And based on some recommendations online, I watched a film called The Ladies Man, which is also a film that he directed.
Oh my God, does he say ladies?
No, not so much. Not so much. But it is.
Is it weird that we've not really seen his work and yet we both have incredibly poor Jerry Lewis impressions?
No, because everyone does, right?
Interesting.
So I'm sure you're doing one in your head right now, listener.
Listener, yeah.
Or
possibly out loud because you think, well, I can fucking do
that.
That's
right.
Than these two. Boobs.
I'm on the subway.
Yeah. No one will notice.
No one will notice, yeah.
Hi. Okay, so again, we will talk about these works.
Yes.
But first, let's have a look at where this dude came from.
Yes, because you can't actually, it's interesting, you cannot appreciate what he did until you know where he, this is one of those stories that starts from year one.
As I started putting together his bio, I was like, I am not qualified to discuss a lot. So, born in 1926, I believe our third featured performer who was born in 1926.
Really?
Out of five, if I'm not mistaken. So, following Hefner and Stanton.
Wow, good year.
Yeah, I know, weird, right? Yeah. Born in New Jersey to Russian Jewish parents, and his dad was, of course, a vaudevillian performer.
Yeah.
And his mother played piano. So
he grew up
in that environment.
As a juvenile
vaudevillian.
Much like someone who he was good friends with later. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But that's part of the story of Jerry Lewis.
Literally grows up backstage in the Catskills because this whole goddamn thing couldn't be more of a cliche if it tried.
Yeah.
So after the war, that'd be WW2 for those following along with the home game, he and Dean Martin form Martin and Lewis. Dean Martin is basically the singer / straight man.
Yes, we'll talk about that, but that's also fascinating. Can I talk? Can I just quickly?
Go.
Can
yeah,
may
do
I?
It. Do
if
it.
I just, if I may.
Please.
If I may, may I?
Do it.
I may. They worked separately for quite a long time, mm-hmm. but often in the same cities. And they got into a rhythm. They started off by happening to be, I think, working at the same hotel.
Yep.
And they started crashing each other's shows
for fun.
That's how it started.
Okay.
He would crash Dean Martin's show, and they would kibitz. Mm-hmm. And Dean Martin would crash his show, and they would kibitz. They would play around with each other on stage, like make sort of poke fun. Mm-hmm. They had sort of developed this rhythm where, because he's much younger than Dean Martin, Dean Martin's a suave, handsome good singer, and he's this little kind of super skinny, slightly effeminate presence, and they almost have like a flirtation with each other is part of their charm.
Darling.
In a way that really, I think, was, you know, not the norm. And they just enjoyed it so much, and the audience loved the bits where they were just making fun of each other so much that was the impetus for them to get together and make the whole act just that.
Son of a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got Martin as the straight man, and he sings, apparently.
Yes.
Again, I'm out of my element.
you really are.
I really am.
Yeah.
And then Jerry Lewis is doing the comedy. And they do that until 1956.
And they are the biggest stars in the world, not even close, mm-hmm. in the late 40s and early 50s. They are David Bowie and Prince and Bruce Springsteen all put together. Like they're
right on.
They're selling out, you know, months at a time for So they, and so eventually, of course, someone says, we should put these guys in movies, mm-hmm. right? They have no idea what they want to do in movies.
Yep.
But
movies were different then.
Yes.
And you could just put
in people in movies. Yeah.
You want to put Elvis in a movie? Great. Yeah. You want to put these guys in a movie? Great. Yeah. So that's what they did. And that continues until 56 when, of course, they break up. Because that's what happens with duos in entertainment. Except for you and me, everyone breaks up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You and I are the only two that people can count on.
That's
everyone
right.
else, sooner or later,
we're not going anywhere.
You look at the guy on the left and you're like, well, he's, fuck this guy. I can do it without him.
Yeah,
I am not an idiot. I know I can't do this without you.
And I'm too lazy to do it alone.
Exactly. You don't know where to upload the episodes.
That's right.
Exactly. So Lewis goes solo. He apparently also starts singing at that point. Weird. Just a thing that he has. And then his solo movie career obviously explodes. And he does, you know,
the,
10,
the,
20
the duo
years of
movie
huge
career
movies.
Was huge as well. They were all very successful. Yeah.
Yeah. But as a solo performer, he certainly proves that he was not beholden to Dean Martin to make that work. Muscular Dystrophy Telethon starts 1966, runs till 2010.
Yep.
Every Labor Day.
Yep.
That's the
Which
thing.
Which is how everyone
knows.
Of my generation knows who he
Jerry
is.
Lewis. Exactly. Yeah.
Just like we think Bob Hope is a guy that appeared on TV specials.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Two more factoids that I'm sure everyone's familiar with. The first is The Day the Clown Cried, which is that he makes a movie about the Holocaust that he feels misses the mark so spectacularly that it never gets released. Very few people have actually seen it. Apparently, he donated a copy to the Library of Congress the year before he died.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yes.
That's all we got.
He And, you know, he had had a few, by the time he made that film, it was 1972.
Yeah. I think.
So he had had a few films not go so well.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically stopped making films after that until he came, he had a little mini comeback with two films in the early 80s.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I mean, one of those things that I guess our generation just grew up being aware of without any proof, but it is apparently true. The French fucking love this guy.
Yeah.
They think he's a genius.
It's not a joke.
I have
not
a quote
joke.
Here yeah. that Americans can't see Jerry Lewis's genius is bewildering.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
For many reasons. So I did actually do some research on this because there's
right.
plenty of it. So, and just the other thing you didn't really mention is Jerry Lewis as a director
yep.
is responsible for video playback.
He is?
He invented it.
No.
100%.
Jesus Christ.
He invented it on the Bellboy so he could direct himself.
Wow.
So he could figure out the timing. So he invented the Video Village. He is absolutely a mentor to Scorsese, mm-hmm. which is why
yeah.
your film. And many other filmmakers on the level of his filmmaking really, really love him because he actually was exceptionally knowledgeable about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So we should talk. I really like the thing that I learned from going through some of these early films is just all the sort of stuff that he brought to the table
right.
and how he evolved into it. And I definitely want to talk about that because that was kind of the most fascinating for
okay.
me.
Okay. But can we start with The King of Comedy?
Because totally.
I don't
yeah,
have
yeah,
an enormous...
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I did pick this movie because, what the fuck, I'm on a Scorsese kick anyway. Yeah. I just watched Last Temptation
and
of
also,
Christ.
It famously crashed his career.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So, it's another one of those movies that I felt I should eventually get around to. So here's an opportunity. That's one of the reasons I like doing this show. Here's an opportunity. Great. Obviously, I made a terrible mistake. Here's why. Because I don't know anything about Jerry Lewis.
Yep.
And I picked a movie... that where he is A, not in it much. He's probably got about 15 minutes.
Right.
And B, he's not really doing the thing.
Right.
He's quite good.
He's mostly playing himself.
Yeah. But he's also playing, I would argue, a very angry version of
yes.
I mean,
yes.
God, I hope
yes.
a very angry version
yes.
of it. Just, he's
yes.
playing a dick.
Yeah.
Like an actual dick, not yep. a funny dick.
Yeah. The best thing about the movie is Sandra Bernhardt.
She is also, she's very good in the film.
Yeah.
This is the point where I have to admit something that, you know, I probably admitted on other podcasts, but certainly never on Death Watch, which is that, you know, I don't really love Martin Scorsese's movies as a whole. There are very few of them that connect with me. I think it was watching this movie right after Last Temptation of Christ, which I watched for our previous episode about Michael Ballhouse, that I finally kind of got it, which is, and this is no insight. People have said this for decades. I
yes.
just didn't internalize it. Scorsese makes incredibly masculine movies, not male movies. He makes masculine movies, right? They are about these tortured men
yep.
and male worldviews, and I couldn't give less of a shit. Like, I just don't. I'm watching De Niro contort himself through this incredibly embarrassing, like, social anxiety engendering scenario where he's trying to get on this guy's show and basically goes nuts, and I'm just like, I can see the value in this as an idea, but I don't care because I don't empathize with this character and I don't identify with this character. I can't get into it. And it's kind of true in Last Temptation of the Christ as well, where it's like, I'm going to identify with Jesus. How would I know? You know, but it's like, it happens a lot. And the movies by Scorsese that I do respond to, like The Age of Innocence and Goodfellas and stuff, they have larger sort of, they have a signature
there's
female
more
role.
Balance.
Yeah, yeah, and there's more yeah. balance as a
yeah.
result.
Yeah.
So it's not that I disliked this, but I kind of had a response that I feel is probably pretty parallel to the way people felt when it came out, which is, God, this movie is uncomfortable. Like, it never allows you a release.
Oh, yeah.
You
no,
know?
It's excruciating.
Yeah.
To
it's
watch.
Excruciating
And it's
to
excruciating
watch.
To try to figure out why it's happening.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that movie that you spend going, but why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
What is the fascination here? Yeah, and especially to come on the heels of Raging Bull, which was this, like,
yeah.
you know, at least critically, sort of massive success. And it's confounding,
mm-hmm.
this idea of a Rupert Pupkin. But it's also, you know, one of those films kind of like Being There, where and Network, I think, where the ideas of it around fame and celebrity have sort of transcended it and become now... you know, lingua franca, like
yeah, a little bit
part of it.
Yeah, a little bit. It is kind of stuck in that time. It reminded me of The Cable Guy.
Oh yeah, 100%.
In a surprising way,
yeah,
where it's
yeah.
like you, there's this, yeah. you know, you're expecting to have sort of an enjoyable comedic experience,
yeah,
and
no,
instead somehow they craft an unenjoyable
yeah,
comedic
yeah.
experience. It's still funny.
Yeah,
like
and,
the movie
and
is
also,
funny.
I have enormous respect for the cable guy for
sure.
being, you know, like really,
yeah.
fearless. About
yeah, but it's another one of these things where it's like, boy, this is a dark.
Yeah,
dark movie.
Yeah, what's the one with Seth Rogen, the mall cop one?
Oh,
it's like that too.
Observe and Report.
Yeah,
yeah absolutely, yeah. same thing. So yeah, that kind of refusal, that frustration of the audience by refusing them the obvious out, is very
yeah.
much part
I mean,
of this movie.
Like I said, it's the movie where I fell in love with Sandra Bernhardt, and
yeah,
hard. I haven't fallen out of love with her since.
Yeah,
but
no,
boy,
she's very good.
It is, but. Some of those scenes where she's sort of torturing him or whatever, like they just go on for, it's just like you want to get out
yeah.
of that room.
Yeah.
They feel icky.
Yeah. But this is what I mean about the masculineness of the filmmaking and also about Lewis's character and not really knowing where the line is. Like when, so he spoilers for people who haven't seen King of Comedy, he's been kidnapped by Robert De Niro and Sandra Bernhardt, and De Niro is off on his show. He's hijacked the show and Bernhardt
right.
is minding him.
Right. And the whole idea is that, they can't take him off the air because he'll kill.
Right, so he's got a hostage situation.
Yeah.
And they've got him like duct taped to a chair, and basically, you know, Sandra Bernhardt's in love with Jerry Lewis, and she is trying to have a romantic dinner with him, and he's like, you know, take the duct tape off.
Yeah.
And so she does, and as she's doing that, just because I'm now in tune with this movie and I know exactly what I'm looking at, I'm like, he is going to flat out belt her. Like,
yeah.
there's not going to be
yeah.
a funny moment here. He's going to stand
yeah.
up, he's going to hit her, and he's going to leave. And that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's that movie. And it's not pleasant as a result. And I'm like, I again, not really knowing Lewis's normal persona or really much about him as a private figure, all I had to go by was the character in this movie, and I was like, "Oh fuck, I don't like this man.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
I do not like him at all."
Yeah.
So maybe you can kind of guide me through some of the more
sure.
classic performance.
Sure. Because I think at one point you were going to watch The Nutty Professor, which would have been a very different experience.
As soon as I was done this, I wanted to do that. I just ran out of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because we're
yeah.
cramming this one in.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Sorry.
Cramming it with walnuts.
We've really gone back to our roots here.
I know.
There's really, there is a strong vaudevillian streak running through this
yeah,
whole episode.
Absolutely.
So here's where I, he's lost his mind. Here's where
I'm
I,
fine.
Yeah, here's where I came through this, which was that I knew that I didn't really like his comedy. There are things I like a lot. Like I really like the typewriter bit that he would do every year on the telethon, which if you haven't seen it, he sort of syncopates a mimed typewriter to the typewriter song, you know, the symphony that's written for typewriter, and he like all the big things and the he's
there's
doing
a symphony for the typewriter.
Yeah, there's a symphony where the
wow.
where the typewriter is an instrument, and all of the various carriage return sounds and dings and rings and all those things are all like sort of timed out perfectly. So you have to type as in time to the
gotcha.
Anyway,
sounds great.
It is great. It is great, and you can find it on YouTube, and it's wonderful. And so I knew I liked sort of some routines, and I knew that he was a gifted. Pantomime artist, but I also knew that as a comedic persona, it just was never my thing. And interestingly enough, going back and watching it now, it's still not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I describe these films as they are like meticulously designed, beautifully produced, profoundly unfunny movies for me.
Right.
Which is a weird place to sit. Like I like everything about them except them.
Mm-hmm.
But what was most fascinating was reading some of the more scholarly writing on his sort of his film career and also on kind of his fame
mm-hmm.
and his celebrity in the 50s was this idea around that he was effeminate and that there was something slightly gay and mincing
mm-hmm.
about his relationship with Dean Martin and that they essentially were like. Because if you look at the films that they made together before he made his own films,
yeah.
they remade romantic comedies from the 30s and 40s, but they played the man and the woman part.
Awesome.
Like they remade Nothing Sacred, but instead of Carol Lombard or whoever, it was
wow.
him. And so they,
Jesus, is this why they broke up?
No, I'll tell you why they broke up because it's also interesting. They broke up because Jerry Lewis couldn't stop wanting to direct movies, so he just never showed up. Like, first of all, he was trying to direct the movies he was in even though they already had directors.
Right.
He, every spare minute, he would go and learn something. From the minute he got on a Hollywood set, all he wanted to do was spend time with cameramen and lighting and sound guys and figure this out and figure that out. He was just endlessly, he collected cameras. He was endlessly fascinated with the sort of just the technology of making films. And he got really, really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone resented him. And especially Dean Martin resented him because right. he didn't care about being in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the end, like on the last film, they wouldn't even talk to each other. They made the movie without wanting to even communicate.
Wow.
They had to talk through the director. Like, and so his first film, The Bellboy, is kind of like a case in point. It's the probably the closest analog is like the Monsieur Hulot films. Mm. Like, it's a very plotless, gag-based movie.
Okay.
Made in the most fascinating way possible, which is that he was booked to play shows every night at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach, big giant hotel resort in Florida, and he was the headliner. So he would sell out the auditorium every night, do two shows, go back to his room, write a bunch of gags that he could film in the hotel,
mm-hmm.
and then shoot them during the day, and then go back and be in the show at night.
Wow.
And that's how he made the movie. So he literally had no ideas other than, I'll be a bellboy in this hotel, and I won't talk.
Great.
And so I'll just come up with bits. So it's largely plotless. It actually starts with a guy who is sort of like the studio executive introducing the movie to you, saying, this movie has no plot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted a plot, you're in the wrong place. But we think you'll like it, kind
right.
of thing. And then it really is like just a bunch of just escapades mm-hmm. with this guy who's a sort of a schmendrick, and you know, there's
is that a technical term?
Technical term, yeah. Okay. So it's a bunch of gags, and some of them are more successful than others, but all of it is just meticulously designed and shot. And in listening to I pulled up the commentary. He is a director that actually did commentaries for all his films,
right?
The commentary for this film is him and Steve Lawrence watching the movie from Steve and Edie,
mm-hmm.
Steve Lawrence, Edie Gourmet. Steve Lawrence is not in the movie.
Just
they're just
over to the
buddies,
house.
And yeah. he wanted, so Steve Lawrence comes over and just laughs
wow.
at the movie. But he, you know, one of the things he said, I think in that, or just generally he talked about, was that, you know, going back to our previous show about Michael Ballhaus, the DPs, the cinematographers on his films had no say except for lighting. Jerry okay. Lewis would lock off every shot,
mm-hmm.
lock, and then say, okay, now you can look in the camera and make sure you light it.
Right.
So
that's
he,
wild.
Yeah. So he was the opposite end of that. He's controlling mm-hmm. sound, lighting, design, sets, 100% all coming from him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say he's like, there's, I think, a lot that somebody like Scorsese would have found inspiration from. And when you watch the films, they are beautifully designed, like I said. So The Bellboy is in an existing location, but it's shot beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
The other film I saw, The Ladies Man, I didn't like as much.
And sorry, where does that take place in the career?
Like almost right after.
Okay.
And what he started to work towards, he worked with Frank Tashlin a lot, who was started out in animation, did Beattie and Cecil,
mm-hmm.
Started at Warner Brothers, and then started directing. And really has a beautifully graphic style. He basically tried to make live-action cartoons by the end. So The Ladies' Man is, the nominal plot setup in that is that he is jilted by his high school sweetheart.
Sure.
And moves to Los Angeles, where he wants to avoid women forever, and winds up, because he's jilted, and winds up working in a house full of aspiring actresses. It's like a boarding house, rooming house,
yep.
for girls who come to Hollywood and need a place to stay. So he designed one of the largest indoor sets ever built. It's built across two sound stages, I think at Paramount.
Good God.
So, and what he did was...
He designed? How much of a control freak was this guy?
A huge control freak. The set is the inside of this four-story house with 30 bedrooms in it,
mm-hmm.
built like a dollhouse. All the walls are cut away.
Jesus.
Yeah. And half the time the camera goes so far back, it's clearly a set.
Right.
Like you see the front and stuff. And it's like, and then by the second half of the movie, a TV crew is going to shoot a TV episode in the house. So it's even more like wow. a set. Right?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's not funny at all. And like, not even a little. You know, really? He is very annoying, but it's also like amazing to watch. Yeah.
Was
yeah.
the bellboy funny? The bellhop? The bell?
The bellboy is funnier. Mm-hmm. The other thing he does in the bellboy is, so he's the bellboy, but he's also Jerry Lewis, because Jerry Lewis in the movie is playing shows at the hotel.
Wow.
So he actually plays himself as kind of like a jaded Hollywood phony version of himself.
Uh-huh.
And also plays the bellboy.
What a great thing.
Yes. And Milton Berle plays himself and also plays a bellboy. Like, it's really, and like they keep seeing each other and being like, was that, wait a minute, that couldn't be like that. So there's like a lot of that kind of
amazing
fun in it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I feel like I need to go back and get some of that exposure.
Yeah,
like I need to do a bit of remedial work on this one.
Nutty Professor is the one that most people have seen. It's certainly the most successful, and I think because it's the one that actually has a plot.
Right.
Like, there's a story in the Nutty Professor. There is no... These films really don't have stories. They're really, like, things that are funny, you know, or meant to
sure.
be funny, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of, like, pretty crazy formal invention going on in them, and like I said, there's this sort of, like, huge amount of if you're nerding out on just the filmmaking and stuff, you know, it's he uses that set in Ladies Man like brilliantly.
Right.
So he has things like, you know, because the walls are cut away, then he'll have a girl sitting at her makeup table doing makeup facing the mirror, which is facing the wall, but there's no mirror in the frame, so she's looking directly into camera.
Right.
Like, so all kinds of like great stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we talk about our next episode?
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's so here's the thing. We don't know who, look, we're recording this in the middle of January. We don't know who's died. We don't know anything.
Yep.
What we do know is this. About a week and a half after you hear this, is going to be the Oscar show. There's going to be Oscars on the television.
That's right.
And we are going to do our first piece of bonus content for the Modern Superior Patreon feed, which is that we are going to review the Oscar death montage. And you will only be able to get that episode. We'll post it like about, you know, a day after, 2 days after the Oscar show. You'll only be able to get that episode if you are a Patreon, I believe it is tier two supporter of this podcasting network.
But honestly, tier two, still
it's
a minor
nothing.
Tier.
It's nothing, man. It's like $5-$10 a month.
That's a stick of gum a day.
Exactly.
You can do that.
It's what you are literally spending on coffee on the average Monday.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So
we have faith in you.
Drink some tea. Go to the kitchen, wherever you work. There's probably tea there.
There's probably coffee.
There could even be coffee. You know what?
There's
boil
coffee.
Some water.
There's coffee provided at my work, and then sometimes I still go out for coffee.
Me
I'm like,
too.
What am I doing?
It's because we're rubes. I mean, it happens to me all the time.
Jamokes.
So, you know what? Sometimes you just need to leave.
We're just jamokes.
We are jamokes.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah, so that will be our first piece of bonus content this year as members of the Modern Superior team. Looking forward to doing that. And then, of course, at the end of March, we will also have our regular episode. That one, you lucky people, you don't have to pay for. But yeah, thank you so much for listening to this episode. As usual, you can find us on Twitter at DeathWatchPod. You can find us at ModernSuperior.com. If you have not rated and reviewed us in the iTunes store, we'd love it if you did. First of all, because it would be hilarious if you just flat out fucking hated the show when you reviewed it. You know, like you just took one star.
Don't just invite that in.
No,
what do you want that?
How fun would that be? Because, you know, the thing about the reviews, they're always great. And that's
they
lovely.
Are, and we love that.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Let's get a review where the review is like, I hope you two are the subject of the next show.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. wait a second, I actually wrote this down. What's the line in the King of Comedy with? So he won't stop to sign the autograph for the lady in the phone booth, and she just screams after him, "You should get cancer!"
Yes,
that should be a review, and you should only get cancer.
You should only get cancer.
Yeah.
That's great.
Apparently, that is a line from Jerry Lewis that he had Martin Scorsese put in the script because it happened to him in real life. He didn't sign an autograph, and that's what someone yelled at him, which is great. Anyway, you know what? Feel free to leave a positive review, too, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, follow your conscience on this. But thank you so much for listening, and we will be back several times in March with more great content.
This episode has been brought to you by the Modern Superior Podcast Network.
Matthew Price, and this is Death Watch Roll Call. I'm gonna say it. I'm pretty drunk. I've been drinking, and I've been traveling, and now I'm on my way home. I'm waiting for my streetcar, but I wanted to get in there and add the list of the people who have passed away since we last did a show. So I'm going to do these in order of starting with the one that was the closest to when we last did the show.